Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Rochester, Michigan, and earned a degree in pre-med from Albion College and an MD from Wayne State University with a specialty in emergency medicine. For 34 years, his ministry was as an emergency physician, and he preached and lived the motto, see one, do one, and teach one. And from 1990 to 2008, he served as vice chief of emergency medicine at St. John's Hospital. His name, Dr. Jim Fox. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. James Fox, affectionately known as Dr. Jim Fox. Welcome, Doc. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's my honor to be here.
Can we talk about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Absolutely. I was actually born at St. John Hospital, so I've come full circle in my life. Started there and then did my career, my caregiving at St. John Hospital. My mom and dad were East Side Detroiters. Mom went to Dominican High. Dad went to De La Salle. And when I was young, 9 years old, we moved to Rochester. And so Rochester is really my hometown. Went to Rochester Adams High School, just a year behind Madonna. So I knew the whole family, the whole Saccone family. And they had six kids. We had six kids. And
what was she like in high school?
Well, she was very dramatic, would be about the best word I could use to describe her. Outgoing. And not too unlike her persona that she developed in the entertainment business.
Did she ever ask you out?
No, but she used to date my brother-in-law.
Okay. all right. What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Mom really stressed to always do your best. No matter what it was, whether it was academics or sports, she was a real stickler on doing your best, but always being honest and forthright. She was a very devout Catholic, and she tried to raise us to understand right from wrong and to leave the world a better place than you found it.
Dad sold used cars, and then he got a Chevy dealership in Rochester. How did that ever happen?
Well, it's an interesting story. When my parents were younger, first married, they used to make the commute from the east side of Detroit up to West Branch, Michigan. And back then, there were no freeways, so you had to take two- and four-lane roads to get up to West Branch. On their commute up there, they would pass through a town called Rochester. And they would stop at a little dairy bar called Knapp's Dairy Bar and have a hamburger and a milkshake on their way up to my grandfather's farm in West Branch. My dad used to pass by the Chevy store there and used to tell my mom that if that store ever came up for sale, he was going to buy it. And sure enough, in 1967, it went up for sale and he bought it. Moved from Grosse Pointe to Rochester, and the family followed a year later.
You have three sisters and two brothers. The two brothers went into the car dealership with Dad. Why didn't you, Jim?
I was always drawn to the sciences. It was just something that I enjoyed doing in school. I guess I became the black sheep of the family because I went into medicine instead of the car business. That's always been sort of the family joke. Even though I grew up in the car business, I spent every summer working on the used car lot when my dad had that and at the Chevy store when we were in Rochester. It just really wasn't my calling. And so medicine was, and that's where I went.
You go to Albion College 500 freshmen, 250 of them were pre-med. But 4 years later, only 25, 10% of them, graduated. You were one of those 25. How was it you survived?
Well, a lot of hard work, maybe a little luck. But Albion College at that time was known as a pre-professional college. It was smaller, so it was a good spot for me to be. And they pushed you very hard. Academics were very rigorous. And I think it was their intention to take this group of 250 and meld it down into 25 or so. Every year they would recommend somewhere between 20 and 30 students from their pre-professional, pre-medicine class. And the pre-medical committee would write a letter of reference for that student to the given medical schools that they were applying to. If you didn't get a letter from that pre-medical committee from Albion College, you probably weren't going to be accepted. But if you did get a letter from that committee, you most certainly did get accepted.
After Albion, when you were choosing a medical school, you told me over breakfast a couple weeks ago, you looked at being book smart versus clinically smart in the selection. What's the difference between book smart and clinically smart?
Well, that was the way I had to make my decision as to what medical school to go to. I was fortunate. I got accepted into several different medical schools. And obviously, financial considerations were there when you were trying to decide which medical school to go to. But also, in my instance, I wanted to come out the best clinician I could possibly be. And for that, I thought getting involved in the clinical arena earlier in my education as opposed to later would be more beneficial for me as to how I could practice the profession of medicine. Therefore, I chose to go to Wayne State University. It was an inner city school. They exposed you to the clinical realm much earlier in your education than other schools that I was accepted at. And their mantra at Wayne State was see one, do one, teach one, which I thought fit very well into my philosophy as to how I could learn the profession of medicine. So you were allowed early in your education to see a certain clinical procedure. The next time, you were expected to do that procedure. And then the third time, you were expected to teach someone else how to do that procedure. So we got exposed to the clinical realm early. We were involved in the care of many, many, many patients. And it allowed us, by the time we graduated from medical school, to be very adept clinically. And so I thought Wayne State would allow me to be clinically smart. Perhaps other schools might allow me to be more book smart, but not have the clinical skills I thought would be necessary to help take care of patients.
We're talking to Jim Fox. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was he determined that his mission was to be an emergency physician. And I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasulin, and we're with Dr. Jim Fox. Jim, how did you determine that your ministry was as an emergency physician?
Well, Jack, in medicine we have the great opportunity to choose a multitude of different fields. But for me, I always felt what was more important than my career in medicine was my family life. That was probably the most important thing to me as I developed into a man, that I wanted to be a husband and a father more than a physician, or at least as much as a physician. So Now, we're going back 40 years, Jack, and medicine was a little different 40 years ago than it is today. I had to make some choices based on how I thought I could develop my life outside of medicine, which was every bit as important as my life within medicine. To do that, I thought that the specialties that were hospital-based would probably be the best choice for me. And hospital-based specialties include emergency medicine, which is what I chose to do, anesthesiology, pathology, or radiology. And of those four specialties, emergency medicine really caught my attention, was interesting to me, and I thought that that would be the best place for me.
In 1988 and 89, you came to the far south side of Chicago, where I grew up, Blue Island, Illinois, $18,000 a year at St. Francis Hospital. Talk about that short chapter in your life.
Well, the $18,000 was actually what I made as an intern at Detroit Receiving Hospital. When I went to Blue Island, that was after I finished my residency program at Detroit Receiving. It was the first job that I had. Blue Island, Illinois, as you said, is south side of Chicago. We were about 165th and Cicero, if any Chicago folks are listening. It was a blue-collar town, a very nice hospital. We saw about 36,000 patients a year, and I joined a group of five other emergency physicians. We were a group of six, and we cared for that population. Very, very busy emergency department, we did some great work there. It was a great, great staff to work with, and I spent about a year and a half there before I ended up relocating with my wife back to the greater Detroit area.
To work for William Beaumont in Troy.
I did. I spent a short stint at Troy and then elected to move down to St. John Hospital in Detroit, where I thought that my clinical skill set would be better served.
You were the vice chair of emergency medicine at St. John from 1990 to 2008. What were the major changes you saw in those couple of decades in the practice of emergency medicine?
Well, in the practice of emergency medicine, as our patient demographics changed, and they did in that part of Detroit, we were called upon to take care of more and more trauma patients, and therefore we had to extend our skill set into procedures that perhaps weren't done in that emergency department prior to that period of time. We saw the evolution of the use of ultrasound in emergency medicine to help quickly diagnose illnesses and injuries that required immediate attention. We developed our critical care skills to be able to take care of the critically ill and injured that would present themselves to the emergency department at St. John. And over that period of time, when I joined the staff, we were seeing about 60,000 patients a year. By the time I left St. John Hospital, we were seeing about 120,000 patients a year. So it was tremendously busy. We developed an emergency medicine residency training program during my tenure at St. John. And we also became affiliated with Wayne State University School of Medicine. So we truly developed the academic prowess of the department, not only by becoming affiliated with the medical school at Wayne State, but also by developing the residency teaching program in emergency medicine, where we put out some of the best and brightest young men and women in emergency medicine during that time.
From 1991 to 2014, you worked with Emergency Medicine Specialist PC. You ultimately ran it. It consisted of 180 physicians and a staff of 75. What was the most special thing about those physicians and that staff?
I think we had the best emergency physicians in the state of Michigan. We recruited very talented, very energetic, very hardworking men and women. The split between men and women in our group was about 50-50. We attracted a lot of women to our practice because I think we understood the needs of female physicians, especially those who are trying to have a family. I think women in medicine have a lot different challenges than men in medicine do, and I think it's important that we recognize those challenges and help women in medicine to deal with those challenges as best we can, those of us who are in the positions of running businesses. When I joined the group, there were six of us, six physicians, back in 1989, and when I left the group, we had 180 healthcare professionals, 75 backroom employees that did everything from human resource management to coding and billing. It was a tremendous place to work. We all respected one another. We had some great minds and some great talent, and we were fortunate enough to have those people and allow them to fully utilize their talents to allow the business to grow.
Jim Fox, what's the key to successfully leading physicians?
I think it's probably being a good listener. I think you also need to lead by example. I never asked anyone to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. And that's true whether it's relating to other physicians or to ancillary personnel in the emergency department. Never was afraid to push somebody to the radiology suite to get an x-ray. Wasn't ever afraid to change a bedpan. Understood that we worked better as a team when everybody rolled up their shirt sleeves and helped one another. And that's the sort of environment we tried to create at St. John.
Dr. Fox, what do all great doctors/physicians have in common?
Humility. Medicine is a very challenging profession. Emergency medicine, probably one of the most challenging. There are going to be times when you don't get it right. You always do your best, but sometimes the outcome isn't what you expected. And oftentimes you need to know that you're just an instrument in providing care. You've been given a great education. You have tons of experience. You try to impart all that experience and education on whatever problem the patient presents with. But oftentimes it doesn't work out the way you want it to. And I think humility is probably the best attribute that a physician can have.
We're talking to Jim Fox, who would see 25 patients a day, 20 days a month. That's 6,000 patients a year. Practiced for 34 years, that's over 200,000 patients that you served. When we come back, we'll ask him, what those 200,000 patients teach him? And I'm Jack Brazil, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with Dr. Jim Fox, who ministered to over 200,000 patients, all with a crisis in the emergency room. What did those 200,000 human beings teach Jim Fox?
Well, Jack, every patient teaches you something unique. One patient's crisis isn't necessarily the same as another patient's crisis. But I did learn that every person who presented, no matter how big or relatively small their problem was, it was a problem for them. They were asking for help, and it was my honor and privilege to take care of them. And I looked at every problem that way, that if someone were to take their time to come to our emergency department and seek advice, it's probably the best compliment that any physician can have, is someone presenting to them and seeking their advice about how to make that patient well. So they all taught me something, and dealing with their families, who oftentimes were in crisis as well, given the illness or injury that the patient was experiencing, dealing with the family always taught me something. And communication was extremely important when families were in crisis like that. So I think learning to be a good communicator, not only with patients, but with their families, was of paramount importance to us in the emergency department.
You strongly believe that emergency physicians are ministers. How so?
Well, I believe we minister in providing better health care, but we also minister in providing better mental health. We're there in crisis moments when patients need us, when their families need us, and we're not just health care providers, but we're also counselors. We also try to tell people or educate people as to how best to live their lives, so perhaps they don't have these same sorts of crises develop in the future. So I think we're ministering to patients and their families vis-a-vis the health care we provide. And we're always there 24/7, 365 days a year. I mean, where else in America can you go to be cared for by people who are compassionate, who are concerned, and who are there for whatever problem you or your family is facing? So in that regard, I think we truly are ministers to these patients, always available in their times of crisis.
We're talking to Jim Fox, who ministered in the emergency room for 34 years, and you told me, Jim, you would say a prayer to start your shift each day. Why and what would the prayer be?
Well, Jack, I, as I mentioned earlier, emergency medicine is a humbling profession. And I often thought and truly believed that I was really a tool in a greater plan for the well-being of the patients that I served. Many times I would care for patients where I thought the outcome would be assured, it'd be a good outcome, and for whatever reason, perhaps the outcome didn't turn out as well as I had expected. There were other times when patients came in and they were terribly ill or injured, and I thought there would be no way, despite our best efforts, that this patient would survive this crisis. And yet they did. So I learned early in my career that I was an instrument of somebody who was pulling the strings. I always did my best. The outcomes didn't always occur the way I thought they would. And the prayer I would say before I entered the emergency department every day was, "Dear Lord, help me do the best job I can for the patients that present to me today."
You told me, Jim, that taking care of children changed after you and Jackie had a child.
It did. My wife Jackie and I were blessed to have three children. And the first one came probably about 10 years after I had gotten into my career. And when he was born, Stephen, it just changed the way I looked at young children. As a father, things change. It's an incredible miracle to be involved in a birth. It's an incredible miracle to be a dad, frankly. And so how I approached children in the emergency department changed because of the miracle I lived with the birth of my first son, and then my second son, and then my daughter, are all incredible blessings. Before children, looked at problems with children as essentially medical problems, physiology problems, a problem to solve and to correct, a problem to fix. Once I had my own children, it became much more than that. I understood the love between a parent and a child, and I understood how precious that was, and I understood that the responsibility, though it was always there in my mind, became much greater. And so my acuity, my anxiety, my desire to effect a positive outcome became greater once I became a father for the young children that I took care of in the emergency department.
We're talking to Jim Fox, who for 34 years ministered as an emergency physician. All right, let's go back to 2015. And Notre Dame asked you to go to Haiti with them for a SALT project.
Well, all three of my children have gone to the University of Notre Dame, so my wife and I have become very fond of the university and involved in the university. I was asked to go visit Haiti through the foundation at the University of Notre Dame because they had developed a SALT project in Haiti that was helping to eradicate a disease called elephantiasis. And what they were doing is fortifying the salt and then distributing it to those people who lived in areas where elephantiasis was endemic, meaning that it's very common. And they were having very good success. So I was invited to go with a group of people from Notre Dame. We spent 3 or 4 days down there. We toured the salt-making factory. We also toured other areas of the island. And in doing so, I got a firsthand understanding of the project and what Notre Dame was trying to do vis-a-vis ministering to these people. I met Father Tom, who was a parasitologist by training, a PhD. He was a member of the Notre Dame staff. He explained a lot of the science behind the project, and also met a gentleman named Jim Reamer, who is a salt expert and who, once he retired, gave his full-time expertise to bringing this salt project to fruition. Not only were they fortifying the salt with the medication that treats elephantiasis, they were also fortifying the salt with iodine, which would help the children in Haiti develop. They wouldn't be iodine deficient that way, and therefore their development would be better. Their mental development would be better because the thyroid hormone requires iodine to be produced in the body, and that helps with cognitive development for all children.
We're talking to Jim Fox, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Jim Fox, who from 1990 to 2008 served as Vice Chair of Emergency Medicine at St. John Hospital. Duck, of all the species on Earth, human beings can be the cruelest. And this fact screams out at times in these emergency rooms. You minister to the richest and the poorest. You told me a story that a homeless person came in with frostbite. You take his socks off. What happened?
Well, Jack, unfortunately, when the case you're referring to is when we took the socks off the feet of this homeless man, his toes came off with the socks. And it just showed that he was so badly frostbitten and that he'd been out in the cold for so long that his toes actually had died. And just removing the socks from his feet actually disarticulated those digits from his feet. So it was a very terrible situation. And you're correct, we do care for affluent people and we care for indigent people in the emergency department. And we have to learn how to switch gears depending on who we're dealing with. But those folks who don't have much rely very heavily on the services that we provide in the emergency department.
How do you handle when a young kid come in that's been shot? An innocent kid. How do you handle that?
Well, first and foremost, you deal with the problem at hand. You just deal with whatever the injury is and think of the physiology and what you need to do to bring this person through this crisis. That's first and foremost. After the acute event is over, after you've taken care of that patient and after they've moved on, let's say, to the operating room, then you get to step back and think about the tragedy. Unfortunately, in the emergency department, you don't get a lot of time to contemplate about some of those horrific cases you care for because there's always another case. So oftentimes we take those emotions home with us. Some of us would live a long ways from the hospital so we could decompress on our drive home. There's a lot of wisdom in that. Others, we just learn to cope with it. And understanding that you've done your best and hopefully brought someone who was tragically involved in the incident you described through that crisis to good health is tremendously rewarding. And so you try to think of the positive aspects of it. But you're right. People can be incredibly cruel to others. And we see that a lot in the emergency department.
In emergency rooms today, in the affluent communities, we see the perils of opiates, fentanyl, carfentanyl, etc. Doc, what's the solution?
I think education is a solution. Good education, starting at a young age, we won't actually be able to get through this crisis without that.
A living miracle today in our community was a classmate of yours at Albion, Faith Fowler, Cass Community Social Services. Tell us about that living miracle.
Well, Faith and I did go to Albion College together, and Reverend Fowler is absolutely iconic in the city of Detroit. What she's done with Cass Community Social Services really should be heralded all over, not just the Detroit area, but the nation. Faith has done great work. Faith has been there for many, many years. That Cass Corridor region obviously is changing. Midtown has changed dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years. Faith was there when the Cass Corridor was at its worst. And I'm just very pleased to be able to say that I know Faith. My wife Jackie and I have had the opportunity to help her with her ministry. We feel blessed to have been able to do that. And I think with the type of work that she's doing, we hope to be able to participate with her ministry in the future and to continue to help her.
I've heard it said that you learn much more from the poor than you ever did from the rich. Why so?
I think that those who have less appreciate perhaps what they have more than those who have more. I've been involved in the care of the poor since I started my career, my training down at Receiving Hospital, and I've stayed pretty much in the inner city of Detroit my whole life. I'd like to say that I learned from the rich and the poor cases or patients that I take care of. I think those who have very little certainly appreciate what you do for them, perhaps more. I don't want to say that people of affluence don't appreciate what we do, but perhaps the expectation is that we would do what we do for them. And poor people, I think, oftentimes are very touched by the care and kindness that you show them in the emergency department.
Jim Fox, you're still a young man in great shape. Someday you're going to go to heaven, and you're going to hear the six greatest words anyone can ever hear. Well done, good and faithful servant. And I believe there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people there greeting you, saying, "Doc, thank you. You saved my kid. You saved me." When you see those hundreds of thousands of people, what are you going to say to them?
I'd probably say thank you to them. As a physician, you're blessed to be able to care for others, and I think that what they provided me was an opportunity to use whatever gifts I had to potentially make the world a better place.
Jim Fox, if you go on Google and you type in "a classy, humble physician," your picture comes up. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.